Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the elusive Thursday edition of the Yard. I elected to punt yesterday just because there was so much going on. I had to check out of the casino at 11 and then had a fabulous lunch there at Mary Mahoney's. Absolutely fabulous lunch. And I went there and met up with some friends. Man, it was a great time. But just felt like, hey, let's push to today, and then we can do, like, what I'm going to do is record the baseball portion of this show, and then we're going to pause, and I'm going to go watch a basketball game. We're going to come back and give you immediate reaction from the basketball game and hopefully be previewing a second-round game for Mississippi State. We will be back tomorrow, okay? And so we'll do our LSU preview for baseball tomorrow. Tigers, of course, number two ranked team in the country, headed to Duty Noble Field. Many have forgotten that last year, even in our second season of discontent, that we still went to Baton Rouge and took the series from LSU. Yeah, those caps still say M over S. Wasn't a great year, but that was a highlight for us to go down there to Alex Box Stadium and take the series from the eventual national champions. But, yeah, we were Biloxi last couple days. And, guys, I love going down there. I do. There's a few reasons why. Number one, I like the Mississippi Gulf Coast. What we have done as a state, as far as development of the Gulf Coast, post-Katrina, it's been amazing. It has been. It's great. So much to do down there. There's always a great show. There's always national recording artists in town. You know, goodness, man, I might move down there. Nah, I'm kidding. I won't. But, yeah, it's great. I love going down there. The restaurants are great, man. The people are always so glad to see us. And so many of you, man, I tell you what, you guys know how to make a guy feel special. I'm not going to lie. You know, I get down there, and it's like if I ever leave the press box and I go down to get some, you know, some pulled pork nachos or something, there's always people that come up and say how much they enjoyed the show or the books, the website. And I can tell you, that didn't cost you anything. It means a lot to me. It really does. And there is some authenticity in what we do. I take a lot of pride in that. I remember years ago, you know, when Jake Mangum was chasing the record, right, the hits record. I said, I'm going to do road baseball. I'm going to stay on the road as long as Jake is chasing the record until we get it. And so then we end up, you know, tying a school record or breaking a school record at Tennessee. And I remember we were the only media people there, me and the bride. And I remember thinking this is a special moment for Mississippi State fans. And so we had the video, the only video out there. Matter of fact, the university asked to use our video. But I was having so much fun, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to keep doing road baseball. I'm just going to keep doing it. I'm having a blast, and I followed that team all the way to Omaha, Nebraska. And it hit me one day. I was like, you know, why don't we do this all the time? Why do we treat baseball differently than we do the other sports, you know? And so I was like, hey, we need a full-time baseball guy. And I said, hey, rather than hire somebody, why don't I do it, you know? And so we actually have divided responsibilities. You know, Mike Nemeth, of course, covers us during the fall and goes to all the fall scrimmages. I go to most, but he goes to all of them. Mike does such a great job for us. So grateful to have him as part of our team. But yeah, we believe in getting out going. Win or lose, we go. And I've missed, you know, just a handful of games over the last, I guess, 5 years now. It's crazy. But I love going down to Biloxi because, you guys are so great down there. And as you've heard me share on the show before, there's just so many times when I was a kid, we couldn't get to Starkville. So the Bulldogs came to us, and it was so special. And my heart gets so warm, man, when I see all these little Bulldogs, right? All these kids that mom and dad are like, hey, let's go make some maroon memories together and go support the Bulldogs. And I see all these kids out there with their gloves and they're wearing their NAFL championship t-shirts and their Mover-S hat. It reminds me of being a kid myself. And so for all of you that took the time and made the investment to come out there and be a part of our two-day stay down at Shuckers Ballpark, thanks for doing that. It means a lot to us, but it means even more to your children. And so incredibly grateful for our Gulf Coast Bulldogs. And we had Bulldogs down there from Pensacola and all over the Southeast. You know, people along that I-10 corridor that made the trip to come support your team. It was amazing. It really was. And look forward to getting back down there next year. You know, I'm told that we want to go back down there. We like going down there because it's so good. Number one, it's spring break. And so our crowds here are not what they normally would be. So we go down there and take the show on the road. And I can promise you the draw we're getting down there is better than what we're getting at home during spring break. But, they do such a good job down there. The people involved with the Shuckers Ballpark, great, great people. Now, I understand, too, you know, it was MGM Park for a while. Now it's Shuckers Ballpark. Based on what I heard when I was down there, it sounds like that Keesler Credit Union, Keesler Air Force Base Credit Union, that they are in negotiations to get the naming rights to the stadium. And so the next time we go down there, we may be headed to Keesler Ballpark. You know, we'll see. But, it's a cool thing down there. And I'm so glad we do it. You know, we did it every other year for a while. We started in 16, went 16, 18, and 20. And then for the last few years, we've gone down there every year. I like going down there. Lamontus likes going down there. I know our fans love us coming down there. So we're going to recap a couple ball games. And by the time all of that part of it gets done, we get to our top 10 list. The basketball game will have been started. And so, again, we'll pause the show. And then we'll go watch basketball. And then we'll come back. We'll wrap it up. And we'll look forward to our weekend. And, again, we'll be back tomorrow with your regular Friday show. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I do. And what's interesting, too, is, like, you know, sometimes Dane and I are like two ships passing in the night. And, we stay busy. We're busy people. And I'll come home, and she'll already be in bed, and there's, like, Bulldog Burger leftovers because she snuck off and got some without me. Yeah, so it's not just me, right? It's not. It's you, too. There's three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Rich and Flowood area. Man, Bulldog Burger Company will cure what ails you. I mean, there's so many times in life you think, well, we have to go out to eat. But, you know, when you go to Bulldog Burger Company, you get to go out to eat, right? It's such a great experience, right? There's sometimes you just got to go, you know, throw some food down somewhere just to sustain your existence. But it's such a treat to go to Bulldog Burger Company. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. It'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that chocolate shake to go. But, you know, the centerpiece is obviously the burgers. It's called Bulldog Burger Company for a reason. Yeah. If you're new to our Bulldog Burger Company family, start with the Bulldog. Start there. And then next time, let's branch out a little bit. And maybe you're adventurous, right? So, you know what, Steve? I'm just going to go in, you know, both feet first. Maybe jump on that mission. Yeah, I get the pico de gallo on the side. You know, I'm not a raw onions guy. I can't stand it. But I love the mission. I love the Good Morning Burger. I love the Freshman 15, the Bryant. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I've had them all, and you should too. Find your own favorites. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's start with the Tuesday game, the game we dropped, and we shouldn't have. We gave this game away. Literally, we gave this game away. We did. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it, but we're going to run through it as quickly as we can. Because basically, here's the deal. I've been around baseball for a long time, and you guys have as well. Guys, when you score in one of nine innings and you are scoreless in the other eight, the chances of you winning a baseball game are not good. They're not good. Simple as it works, right? And it was very much a pitcher's duel early on. I mean, it really was. And so, you know, of course, it's our home game that we're giving up. So we're heading down there playing our home game on a neutral field. But, man, we come right out there and we go right to work. You know, you start thinking, okay, all right, let's make some things happen here. And just so you know, too, it was an SEC crew. They called both of those games down there. Yeah, so good for them, I guess. But Bradley Lofton comes out. And maybe that's the story of the midweek, right? Is how good Bradley Lofton did and how your Bulldog bullpen did, especially on Wednesday. And that's the thing, heading into SEC play, you want to be able to find some things. Maybe we found some things. And we needed Lofton to get going. And we may end up needing him on the weekend before the season's over. I love Bradley Lofton's game. I absolutely do. And I thought he was absolutely filthy. You know, that's the time last year. We had trouble at times with control and walking people, but he's so competitive he would kind of work his way out of it. And, of course, we find out later, you know, he had some cleanup that needed to be done. And now, all of a sudden, we see him in his resplendent glory to go down there and give us three great innings. But, man, he strikes out the side in the first. And I'm going to tell you what, that changeup was absolutely filthy. Filthy, you hear me? It's one thing to see it on TV, but to kind of watch from behind the plate and to see how these guys gear up thinking that fastball is coming and just to see how awkward it all goes, no worries. No worries at all. So we strike out the side there. Bottom of one, you know, we open up. Imani gets a leadoff double, and I'm thinking, all right, here we go. Here we go. But, guys, we didn't do anything with it. Larry comes around. We think he's going to score. They call him out. They review it. The call stands, and I'll be honest with you. I looking at it in live action and then seeing the limited replay that we had in the booth, I thought he was out. I know a lot of our people disagreed. I thought he was out. I may be wrong, but the box score says that he was out. But it was big. That was a big moment in the ball game because we had a chance there. And what's interesting, too, is I met the mom of the player that threw him out. And I guess she recognized me from the game. I saw her at the IP, and she had to come up and tell me that was her child, her son, that threw him out. Yeah. And then the USA chant. I love my country, too. All right, top of second. And we come right out there. Lofton gives up his first hit, and then there's a stolen base. And we pick him off. And we have done such a good job, and that's Justin Parker. How many times this year have you seen us get a guy hemmed up? And it's just, and that comes from the bench. You know, you got the earpiece communication system, you know, with Parker and the catchers. And so that's all signaled in. And the next thing you know, we're doing a really good job kind of containing the running game, especially from the mound. That's been probably an unheralded accomplishment for our pitchers this year. I don't know if it gets talked about enough. What a good job we've done picking off runners this year. And you get him here. The guy's still second, and then we get him. We get him. Great, great effort here. And so you face the minimum through two if you're Lofton. All right, bottom of second, and again, we had some chances here. And that's the thing, that's what makes it feel so bad. I told Mike Nemeth after the game, I'd rather get beat 10-5 than get beat 6-5 like this because there were so many chances for us to get separation this game, we didn't get it done. But, Kohler walks, and then we get picked off. You know, and that just can't happen. That's happened a couple times with Logan. We've got to have better focus there. But then Hizak, who's been red hot as of late, kind of overshadowed by what Dakota Jordan's done, obviously. But Hizak doubles to left, gives us a chance here. Then Joe walks, right? Wild pitch, and then everybody moves up. And then we walk Dylan Cup. Bases loaded here. A base knock here probably gives us two runs. And probably, you know, changes the complexity of this ballgame, and Imani Larry grounds to the shortstop there. Good job by their pitcher getting under the barrel there and forcing a ground ball. But, again, a chance for us early to make this thing kind of sing a little bit. We didn't get it done. Top of third, Lofton gives up a hit, but gets a couple punch outs there. And that's the outing for Bradley. And, man, how good was it to see this kid go out there and throw strikes and get ahead in counts. It was great. That's huge for Mississippi State baseball. All right, bottom of third, nothing going for State. And then top of four, we bring in Luke Dodson, who really, really good as well. You know, and again, it kind of gets overshadowed because it's just like some people are kind of wired to always see the positive in life and some are wired to always see negativity in life. And so it's like all of a sudden, you know, Carson Ligon and Colby Holcomb hadn't pitched well until this week. And so that's what we focus on. We don't realize, hey, Bradley Lofton is finally working himself back into good health. It's almost like signing a free agent or picking up a guy in a transfer portal. This is a guy that's with first-round talent. And then Luke Dodson's a guy that turned down money to come to school. Right, him and Nolan Stevens both will be able to help us on weekends, for sure, down the stretch. Maybe not his starters, but working as middle relievers. Pretty good stuff there. But Dodson, again, gets a 1-2-3 inning in his first inning of work, and then, hey, we blow it open in the fourth. And it felt like, you know what, we were so close to doing it earlier. This is it, right? There was so much ball game left, though. We kind of lost our focus a little bit. But a lot of this happens, you know, with one out. And Hizak, again, singles and then still second. They walk Powell. Cup grounds out to the pitcher, but it works like a bunt. We get runners to second and third, but we're going to need a two-out base hit. We're going to need a two-out base hit. That worked really well for us on Sunday against Evansville. And we get one here. As Imani Larry homers to left field. Makes it 3-0. Then Mershon comes right back and doubles. And then DJ. Oppo Taco here. And there was some problems here too. Now, and I've talked to people that are not affiliated with Mississippi State. Find out kind of what happened. Some people had some communication with the officials. And what happened... Dakota Jordan basically carries his bat with him most of the way to first base. You know, they thought South Alabama was offended that he kind of pimped a home run. And so he's kind of taking his time getting around the bases. And the third baseman, per a third-party objective report, off the record, tells me the third baseman used some profanity and told Dakota Jordan, you know, to get his you-know-what around the bases and quit being a you-know-what hole. And Dakota Jordan said, "What?" And that's when it all kind of started there. But it was all initiated by the third baseman from South Alabama. And then Calvi comes out there after both benches are given a warning. And so he comes out there wanting to know what they're warned about. Well, I mean, obviously, Mark, we all saw the thing happen. And the officials are trying to do a good job here to kind of keep things from escalating. And according to, again, an objective third-party report, that Calvi says, well, what did he say? Talking about his third baseman. And they couldn't tell him. I said, well, I'm not exactly sure what he said. I said, well, then how can you warn us when you don't even know what he said? And that's when things escalated. He was ultimately ejected. He threw his hat down on the ground, which is an automatic heave-ho. Always happens that way. But this was a turning point in this ball game. I thought South Alabama got fired up. I felt like they were being disrespected. And I thought we relaxed a little bit. And I thought really that was the difference in the game. But it's 5-0 here. There's been the ejection. Hunter Hines grounds out the second. Actually hit the ball pretty well, but nothing to show for it. Our top of five. And we come back out, and this is when we talk about focus all the time, right? A lack of focus. So we come right out there, and it's a leadoff walk. The last thing you want to do after you go up there and put up a crooked number and give your team some separation is go out there and walk a leadoff hitter. I mean, that's if I would rather him hit a solo home run because at least you're pounding a strike zone, right? You say, but Steven, that would count as a run. This one did too. And then Bell singles through the left side. So now you got runners at first and second. All right, and it's just kind of crazy how it all works here. Johnson doubles down to third baseline. Run comes around and scores. 5-1. And you can almost live with this, okay? So you look at it and say, you know what, hey, they've got a little something going. We got a freshman on the mound. He's got to learn to work through this, and he has. But and he comes right back and gets Matthews to strike out swinging. Very good moxie by the young guy here. And then he gets Burgess to line out the short. So two outs. We just need a routine ground ball. We need a non-productive out. Just need to be able to get out of this deal here. You know, I guess two outs in the inning. They're all outs non-productive. But it's just kind of crazy. It's just kind of crazy how this thing kind of hangs up here. And so everybody's kind of coming in and converging. And on the infield, the shortstop is the king of the castle. In the outfield, the guy you want making that play is the guy coming in. You do. You want him to make that play in front of him. But it's a miscommunication here. And two-run score. And so instead of it being a 5-1 ball game and them needing to string together some hits or some quality of bats here, we've made it a two-score game. And we did it. Yes, they put the ball in play, but we have to make that play. And people would say, well, hey, Steve, we're Mississippi State. Guys, that's the most standard play in baseball, right? You got to be able to communicate that. We made a mistake, and it cost us dearly. Because I'll be honest with you, I think if we get out of this deal with a four-run lead, I think we're having a different conversation today. All right, bottom of five, Stegos 1-2-3, all ground outs in the inning. Top of six, South Alabama gets a little thing going here, you know, thanks to a hit by pitch. You know, again, we're kind of adding our own misery here. But, again, the kid kind of digs down deep here. Nolan Stevens on the mound now for State, who I think is going to be a star for us. And we're able to navigate through this thing without giving up anything. But, yeah, there was traffic on the bases. But I thought that at the time I thought, hey, this is a turning point in the ballgame, right? They're starting to get some momentum here, and we're able to kind of shove it back in them because we have the hit, they steal, we get a strikeout, and then there's the fielder's choice, we make a play there, and then we make an error, and rather than see Stevens kind of fold a little bit, we get another ground ball and force the runner at second. So again, traffic on the bases, but we're able to navigate through that without any trouble. Bottom of six, day goes 1-2-3. It's nuts, man. It's like all of a sudden, after that ejection, it's like all of a sudden we got a little bit impatient at the plate. All right, top of seven, we bring in Cam Schulke, and one thing I'm learning about Cam is if he doesn't get the right umpire, there's going to be traffic on the bases. Not to say that he's always perfect, but my hope is as we get a little deeper into the SEC season and umpires have had a chance to see him a little bit often, I don't know that he's getting a fair take To be, I'm just kind of saying it from how I see it. Especially last night, I thought Wednesday night. I thought even though he had a good outing, I didn't think that he was getting the full expanse of the strike zone. But here we are, top of seven. He gets Matthews to strike out looking. I tell you one thing: that overhand changeup from Schilke is ridiculous. We walk Borges, and then Turner walks. Now you got runners at first and second. Ty runs on base. He gets Melton, the kid from Hernando, to strike out looking. We bring in Tyler Davis to face the lefty, and they single back up the middle. And this is that play where the ground ball, and they could say it's a miscommunication. I had somebody yesterday tell me that Mershon was blocked by the umpire. You know, but either way, we let this ball get through, and now it's a 5-4 ball game. Kind of fortunate to get out of there with the lead. And again, it becomes kind of a broken record for State. Nothing going here. We get a single to the right side, you know, from DJ. Really good job of hitting there, but that's it. And you get him on base, and it's a pop-up to the pitcher and a foul out to the catcher. This can't be, man. All right, top of eight. Sticking with our guy here. And Tyler Davis, we get, you know, we walk the first guy. And you hate to see it. They sacrifice him to second. And then we get a strikeout. And it's crazy. We get the strikeout. We have to throw down to first. And for some reason, Holt decides, I'm going to break for third. Hunter Hines makes a great throw over there. And we get him out. He slides off the bag. You know, it's not a double play you see every day. It's some of the worst base running I think I've ever seen, though. You're already in scoring position. You don't have to advance yourself here because more times than not, a base hit's going to score you from second, even with two outs. But he just takes off and goes and basically gives us, and you feel like, okay, we've wrestled it back here. Guys, top of eight, we just need to kind of get three more outs here. We're out the door. It'd be nice to get an insurance run, but we don't. Kohler flies out to left. Hysek pops up to third, and then Powell grounds out to short. And here we go, top of nine, and this is where I'm thinking, okay, Auger's been so good, they're not going to be able to get to him. That's how it felt. And we come out, we get a fly out to center field, and how many times do we see it? You get the first guy, things kind of go quickly. And then they pinch hit Patrese, who has been their regular DH, comes in and barrels one up and kind of gets the rally started. Now, all of a sudden, the time runs on base. And then we walk Turner. And that's the thing that hurts you, right? You start compounding to your own misery here. You give up the single, and then it's a walk. And then Melton, the kid from Hernando, doubles in a left center. Both guys come around to score. Now it's a 6-5 ball game. We get Sullivan a strikeout looking as Melly strikes out swinging. But the damage is done. You know, hey, Patrese gets the single. You tip your cap there, but then you walk the next guy. I mean, goodness, you know, if we're able to get a ground ball, and Lamona said in postgame that Brooks didn't have his slider working for him, and that's really what you want to do is roll up a ground ball there, maybe get a game-ending double play. But here we are now chasing the ball game. Blown save for Auger, and I still have the utmost respect and confidence in Brooks Auger without any reservation. All right, bottom of nine. We have this kind of a crazy situation here, right? And so Cup hits a ball basically outside of third. It's inside the bag, but the momentum of the bat takes this thing into foul territory. This kid makes almost a Brooks Robinson quality play, the kid at third for South Alabama. He makes that throw all the way across the diamond. It was obvious in real time that he was safe. I think we had a situation where an umpire is caught up in the emotion of the moment and anticipated a call. Of course, we challenge it, review it, and yes, he did. His foot is on the bag before the ball is in the glove. So Dylan Kopp, great effort here to get the tying run on base here. Really, really, really nice effort play from him. Larry lines out the second hit, and that's just bad luck, right? He just kind of mishit one there, and it's kind of flared it out to second. They're able to get, you know, Kopp gets back there. It wasn't like we call it a liner, but it was kind of a soft liner. Mershon grounds out the second. Kupp's able to take second on this play because it was one of those balls hit more to the left-hand side of the second baseman. The only play there is to first. Well, they intentionally walked Dakota Jordan. And now you're thinking, you know, we could see some maroon magic here. I mean, Hunter Hines, obviously, if he doubles in the gap, we're going to get at least one. If he gets one over the fence, we're going to walk it off in grand fashion. But instead, we ground out to first base. And you got to feel like at some point, too, I think in many respects, when they're walking and Dakota Jordan intentionally, I think it puts even more pressure on Hunter Hines. But Hunter Hines is a classically trained hitter, okay? And I see some comments out there. Guys, he's one of the top home run hitters in the country. I know it hadn't come together yet, but it's going to. I don't think he gains anything, but from sitting, you let him work through it. You let him and Gautreaux figure it out. But we lose ballgame 6-5. Disappointing. And we said, hey, we felt like this the more difficult game was going to be this one. It's a game we lost. It turned out they were both pretty difficult. Both teams came to play. But, again, you go back and look at this. You know, the game really turned, I think, on two things. Number one, the ejection that fired up the team. And then the error, and there were multiple errors, even though they may not always get charged. You know, we dropped that fly ball in the left. We let that ground ball get through. All that leads to runs. You can't give away outs, and you certainly can't give away runs. And we did, and we gave the game away. All due respect to South Alabama, it goes in a win. They're not going to call me. The D1 baseball committee is going to say, Steve, you know, we're thinking about South Alabama. What do you think? Oh, we gave them the game. Keep them out. It's not going to happen. But, again, you look at this. You feel good about Lofton's performance. Dotson, of course, it's a shame that he gets charged with those two runs. I didn't agree with the scoring decision, but, you know, better yet, let's just catch the baseball. Nolan Stevens goes out, has a hitless inning, of relief. Cam Schulke, a couple walks there. But, again, it's not always going to be about Cam's control. It's going to be about an umpire seeing it. We talk all the time about seeing the baseball as hitters. Umpires are in the same situation. Brooks Auger, of course, charged with the loss. Only runs that have scored against him all year. They're his own responsibility. So that's game one of your trip to Biloxi. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com. All right, Wednesday was a new day, as you guys are well aware. And we had the 8-7 at the time, Privateers of New Orleans coming in. It's very interesting, too. Amani leads off and they plunk him. You know, it's funny how that worked, right? That's the retaliation, right? But seriously, back to top one. Again, I look at our pitching situation. I wondered about this all week with us having to have five games this week. I was like, how in the world are we going to piece this thing together? And we did. We needed some guys to step up. They did. Tyson Harding gives up a triple to right field. And this is just kind of one of those things that happened here. But rather than panic, he gives them nothing. Like when you got a runner at third and less than two outs, you need a non-productive out to keep that guy there. And he gets it. He gets a punch out, and then we get a pop-up to third. And so they get nothing and like it. It's a really good job by Tyson. All right, bottom first, you know, again, they plunk Larry, but we don't do much around him. They walk Hunter Hines to set up a situation for Hizak, and we ground to third. There were a couple times last night that you and I did a great job getting the ground balls. A couple big double plays in this ball game kind of extended the game, to be quite honest with you. All right, top of second, Harden goes out there again, 1-2-3 inning for him. Bottom of second, State goes 1-2-3. Top of third, we bring in Carson Liggett, and I saw the social media traffic. And I'm not going to sit here and say, well, I had the utmost confidence in him, because I did not. And I thought, you know what? We got to figure a way to work this thing out, but, man, we can't afford to drop two games in Biloxi heading to SEC play. I don't know who else I would have thrown. I probably would have stuck with Harden for a little bit longer. But Liggett surprised us all. And the very first guy we walk him, and we're all thinking, here we go again, right? He gets Lupe to strike out looking. We get a ground out, and then we get a ground out to short. And so you get out of that. Again, you lead off walk, but you're able to navigate through that without getting anything else on base or on the board. All right, bottom of third, nothing much going on here for State either. You know, we get to fly out to right. Larry singles to the left side. And then Mershon walks and Jordan walks. And Hines grounds into a double play there. Again, a chance for us to get some early separation in this game, and they clearly wanted to give it to us. But we don't punch it across. You get three guys on base, and you leave all three of them. These are the things that can't happen. And certainly, at the very least, you want to get, you know, a productive out here. You know, fly ball to right field gets us a run here. But double play, for sure. All right, top of four. Liggett's back out there. He gets a foul outside of third, and then we get a strikeout. And then there's a walk, and the guy's still single, and we get a line out to left. And so, again, a walk in the inning, we're able to navigate around it. Two-out walks are killers, but they weren't this time. Bottom of four. State gets on the board here. Hizak lines out to left, hit the ball pretty well. It was really windy last night, too. And a lot of balls hit up, didn't stay up, but this one did. Nolan Stevens, a homer to right field. It was a Dave Kingman-esque quality home run. I'm dating myself. Many of you young bucks already know who Dave Kingman is. But when Dave hit home runs, there were always these towering fly balls. There were never any wall scrapers. But this one that Nolan Stevens hit, his first as Bulldog, was an absolute tank. And it really got us going a little bit, right? I think because of the fact that there was so much going on with the outfield out there. A lot of those balls hit up were an adventure. It was impossible to really know how things were going to go. And so Stevens just hits the tank. Kohler then walks. And Cup reaches on a fielder's choice, but they force Kohler at second. That ends the inning, but State's at 1-0. All right, top of five. And this is an unfortunate situation for Carson Liggett, who was pitching well. Get a pop-up to third, and then we're out. And what a great play by Hunter Hines here. I don't know if you got a chance to see it live. I don't know that I've ever seen him make this play. He ranges off of first to his right and full extension dives and makes a stop on a ball that's destined for right field and gets up and throws a strike to Carson Liggett, who covers first. It was an amazing play. That's a money-making play right there. You know, some of our fans have often talked about Hines defensively, and he's getting better and better and better. He's making some plays he doesn't normally make. So that was big. Really, really big right there. We give up a double to left here, and then next thing you know, it's a ground ball to short, and we boot it. Things don't work out. The run scores. And so Liggett, of course, you know, gives up the double, but comes right back and rolls up the ground ball, and we don't make the play. I'm not being critical of Dylan Cup. It's baseball. Nobody's going to be 1,000%. But that's what led them to them scoring there. And you got to be able to get off the field when your pitcher rolls up a ground ball like that. And he knows it. I'm not getting on Dylan. But we get a strikeout looking. And so, again, Liggett kind of mitigates the damage here. It's a tie ball game, but you're thinking, you know what? Hey, what's happening here? Well, Liggett all of a sudden began to eat up some innings. Bottom of five, Larry flies out to center. Mershon grounds out. Jordan singles to center field. And again, just kind of staying hot. You know, Hines pops up to second. And we got to get Hines going. This weekend will be great. All right, top of six, we bring in Colby Holcomb. And again, I saw the social media traffic. I'm not going to sit here and tell you. I thought, well, this is the right move. I didn't know that it was. I didn't think it was. I thought, man, why do we bring this guy in a 1-1 ball game when the wind is so crazy out here? A guy that's routinely giving up a lot of fly balls. And he does this inning too. Lengthy at bat here, but he gets Sanford line out to left. Lengthy at bat with Callaway, gets him line out to right. Then we walk Castillo. And I didn't have a lot of confidence at this point. I'm going to be honest with you. Even with two outs, I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe this is a one-inning thing. Maybe we can get out of this without giving up anything. He gets Williams to strike out swinging. And I thought that was the shakiest inning that Colby Holcomb had because he was lights out the rest of the way. Stay goes 1-2-3 in the sixth. We get back on the seventh. I thought Colby really found a sense of himself in this inning. You get the quick ground out, and then Hurst strikes out swinging. And, guys, it was absolutely filthy. The breaking stuff from Holcomb last night was elite. And then he gets looped to strike out swinging, too. A lengthy at bat, and he finally finishes him. Case swinging. Great, great job. All right, bottom of seven. You know, we work around a one-out walk here and got nothing out of it. And that's the thing, too. I thought, and again, I know there's a lot of wind out there. I didn't think we barreled up a lot of balls last night. Yeah, you know, and listen, I get it. They keep throwing a different guy at you over and over and over again. I get it. But the reality of it is, I just thought our approach to the plate last night led a lot to be desired. You got to go up there looking to hit line drives. And listen, it's not as simple as that. It's not like Build-A-Bear or something where you get exactly what you want. But I thought we were dropping our shoulder a little bit, trying to take some upper trajectory swings. And that wind wasn't always our friend. All right, top of eight, Holcomb back out again for his third inning of work here. Gets a ground out, and we get a fly out. And then, lo and behold, we booted again at short. And I turned to Mike Nemeth, and I said, it'll be interesting to see how Colby handles this. Something has gone wrong. It was not his fault. He rolls up a ground ball. How will he respond to this? Well, he gets Callaway to strike out swinging. And again, a lengthy at bat here. And again, the slider is just nasty. And he throws it on a full count and just absolutely makes the guy look silly. He couldn't hit that with a garden rake. All right, bottom of eight. Again, nothing going well for State offensively. It's 1-2-3 inning here. I take that back. It's not. Hines does single through the right side. And then Hizak grounds into double play. We talked about those important double plays, and both of them were significant. A chance for us to push some things across, and we don't. All right, top of nine, Holcomb's still out there. And right now everybody's thinking, you know what, this is when you run out of gas. But he didn't. He shoved. He goes out there, back-to-back Ks, they pinch hit, and he walks Sparling. And then he gets Hurst to strike out swinging. So four innings of hitless relief for Colby Holcomb. Outstanding effort. Seven Ks, too. Absolutely phenomenal. We needed to see that. That's the guy we had in the fall. That was the guy we had in the early spring. That wasn't the guy that we had in his last start of the spring in his first couple appearances this year. It was kind of a return to form last night. We don't win that ball game without Carson Ligon and Colby Holcomb, period. All right, bottom of nine, State with a chance to walk it off here. Chance out. Kohler strikes out swinging. And then Johnny Long walks here, lengthy at bat here, and then goes to second on a wild pitch. Cup comes up, you're thinking base hit, probably scores a run, we walk it off. And we get a strikeout swinging. Extra innings, free baseball for us. Some really, really bad base running here. You know, I told you we had some bad base running early in the midweek. This is terrible here. So Lupe doubles to right field. And I guess maybe he just thinks that, you know, Dakota Jordan is just some dude. Well, he is. He's our dude. This is a legit double. And he comes up. And, guys, Lupe is out by 10 feet. The throw wasn't exactly on target. Loco had to go up there and grab it, and it makes a tag, and then the kid flies across the bag, and we go double it up anyway. He was already out, but just to be sure, it's good mature baseball there. But what is he doing? It's a 1-1 game. In the 10th inning, you get a leadoff double. You stay your butt at second base. But no, we're going to be Johnny Hero, and ended up being Johnny Zero. Absolutely terrible base running. We benefited from that. Sonye, the next guy, singles up the middle. You know, you never know that the sequence of pitches may change, but you know what? That probably had to really, really stink. Sit on that dugout, knowing that, hey, that could have been the game-winning run right there. Yusech grounds out to the pitcher, and this is all against Schilke. You know, Schilke's coming here in the 10th, but back-to-back base hits, and then we get a ground out to the pitcher, and then we walk Sanford, and then we get Callaway to strike out looking. And Cam, when that changeup is legit, it really is. He didn't throw especially hard. He just finds what works for him. But it's going to be interesting when we have so many teams in the SEC that may hit soft. I mean, it's going to be a much different deal. When they hit soft, it's going to be a different deal. All right, bottom of 10. They walk Amani Larry. So here we are, a chance to walk it off when he runs on base. We get the sack bunt down. We bring in Michael O'Brien, a pinch run for Larry. They walk Dakota Jordan intentionally. And Hines hits one on the screws. And guys, a foot either way, this ball game's over. Hines absolutely ripped this one. Just happened to rip it right at the guy. And they're able to force O'Brien out of the play. Nobody's fault. It's kind of baseball. All right, top of 11. Cam's still in the ball game. We get Castillo to ground out. Williams singles. This is one of those crazy ones here. It's just kind of running backwards. Just couldn't get a glove on it. And anyway, so we pick Williams off at first. It was great. Really good effort again. We talked about it. Parker doing a great job holding runners accountable. They reviewed it. Call was confirmed. And then Watt grounds out to the pitcher. And that's it. And at this point, we feel like we needed some things to happen. Well, it does happen for us here in the 11th. Hizak hits the ball down to the six hole. And when the kid is having a retreat and the guy makes a great play. But he has no chance to get Hizak. None whatsoever. I don't even know why he attempted to throw. I get it. You're a competitor, but you're more likely to throw that ball away than throw that kid out. And then Bryce Chance, who had been inserted in the ball game later, singles first pitch back up the middle. So now all of a sudden we push this thing around. Now we're going to, hey, let's go ahead and bunt. You know what's going to happen. You know, you're going to bunt, they're going to walk a guy, and you're going to need a base hit. But you get the bunt down, and lo and behold, it's such a great bunt by Kohler. It just kind of dies out there. And he beats it out. And now the bases are loaded. And we elect to bring Aaron Downs to the plate to pinch hit for Johnny Long. He fouls the first pitch back, and then they draw the infield in, and he absolutely rips one 106 miles an hour through a drawn-in infield. And that's the game. And State walks it off. But, again, the story of this game is not just State grinding one out. It's the fact that Carson Ligon and Colby Holcomb came out there and gave some very, very productive innings. We do not win this game without those two young men's contribution. We talked about on this show, you can't give up on guys this early in the year. And listen, I get it. You got to figure out who you can trust. But and maybe it's them working midweek to save some other guys for the weekend. But when it's all said and done, State pitching gives up five hits, one run that is unearned, 13 punch-outs against five walks. That'll get it done. That'll absolutely get it done. And State with eight hits in the ballgame. You would say, you know, who's your offensive hero? Really not one, you know, for State. Our eight hits were scattered among the lineup, but Dakota Jordan obviously getting on base. We need Hunter Hines to get going. We do, you know. And again, he hit a couple balls hard last night and just had the one hit to show for it. But I'm not worried about Hunter Hines. I know many of you are like, "Oh my gosh, here we go, guys." It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's happened his entire college career. He's just kind of in a funk right now. And just kind of having some atom balls. I think he's going to be fine, and I think everybody just needs to relax a little bit. And so at this point now, we're going to go ahead and pause the show, and we'll come back with the top 10 list, and then we'll break down Mississippi State's game against LSU from the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. All right, we're back as the Mississippi State Bulldogs defeat LSU to advance to the quarterfinals of the SEC Tournament. We'll break down the game completely. Just here shortly, we'll do our top 10 list now. We'll get to that. And congratulations to Chris Jans and all the Bulldogs. It was a difficult first half. But in the second half, you know, the problem that I think LSU ran into, and this is really the case for a lot of people, a lot of teams, I think the problem you're going to run into is you're just not good enough. And that was the case with Josh Hubbard. And, again, we'll speak about it in its entirety once we're done with the top 10 list. But in the end, Josh Hubbard, the most talented player on the floor, exerted his will and willed this team to a win in the second half. Of course, it's a team game, But Josh started making some shots and facilitating. That proved to be the difference. All right, today's top 10 list brought to you, as always, by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. Blair Chandler is a mortgage professional. He is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. 23 years of experience, back-to-back-to-back years in the top 1% close ratio in the country. Thus, close with Blair. Maybe you're an atypical borrower with a non-conforming property. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know how it works. You know, but the reality of it is this. You need to have somebody with the know-how to get you to the closing table. You're looking for a game day condo? Blair can help you with that. He can come up with a plan. And if you're looking to buy a home for the first time, or maybe the second or third time, who knows? Get with Blair and get pre-qualified. That way you're not wasting your time, all this emotional energy you expend trying to pick out a house and put some roots in the ground, right? Blair can help you with that. He's the kind of guy that makes dreams come true. Give him a text or call today at 601-500-2344. Again, that's 601-500-2344. All right, my buddy Richard, who shares my affinity for all things hair. You may have seen Richard in the windows years ago. Maybe you did. He used to play at Poets there in Jackson. Very talented guy. Good friend to Mississippi State. Good friend to me. And Richard reached out. Richard and I are members of several of these 80s hair band Facebook groups. And Richard said, hey, have you done a Danger Top 10? And I'll tell you this, we haven't. We're going to do one today. To kind of give you the Danger story with me, I've never met Ted Poley. I've got a lot of mutual friends with Ted. And they tell me he is an absolute sweetheart and that everybody that has a chance to interact with him never gets big-timed by him. You say, well, Steve, well, Danger is not Guns N' Roses or anything. No, I get that. But everybody has had some measure of success, and it's good to see people like Ted Poley that are in tune with their fans, right? No matter how acclaimed you may be, it's always good to see people that have a measure of humility. So all of our Danger songs today are going to be with Ted Poley on vocals. There was a time when he was out of the band, he got fired, they brought him back, and there was a run there with another singer, and all due respect to him, it's not the same to me. But when I moved back from Canton, Mississippi, the summer of my senior year, it was interesting. Wrote about all that stuff in When the Bottom Falls. You can order a copy today at whenthebottomfalls.com. But as I moved back to Columbia, getting ready to go to Jones Junior College in hopes of furthering my athletic and academic career, I went to go buy the school clothes, right? And my mom took me over, my best friend went with me, and he had the Danger debut album. And he goes, have you heard this yet? And I said, no. He goes, well, go ahead and borrow it because it's excellent. And it is. That album still holds up. Now, I'll share with you this. It's very 80s. Okay, so if you like the 80s, you're going to love Danger. If you don't like the 80s, you're not going to like it. I like the newer stuff, too. As I got ready to do this list on our travels from Biloxi, I listened to some of the later stuff in the Danger catalog. And I like it. I like the new stuff. And we're going to have a couple tracks from the latest album on our top 10 list. So there you go, Danger. Today's top 10 honoree. So we're going to go with the number 10 and number 9 songs are both from the Revolve album. And while it's still kind of true to the Danger sound, you can tell they've matured a little bit as musicians. It's a little more, I guess you'd say, not really cast to the genre itself. It's a little more just kind of straight ahead rock and roll, right? It's not the pop metal that we had in the 80s with some bands. But number 10 is a great track called Keep On Keeping On. And again, it's a song of encouragement. We all need more of that in life. There's so much negativity out there. Yeah, there's a song for every mood. But more times than not, I like to listen to things that are uplifting. This is one of them. You know, when adversity comes along in life, you got a choice. You can let it beat you, or you can keep on keeping on. And that's what number 10 is about. Number 9, absolutely love this song. I do. I really like it. I like the arrangement in the song. I do think it sounds a lot more modern. And a lot of the longtime Danger fans have accepted this kind of new direction in the band because Ted has rejoined the fold. Great track called That's What I'm Talking About. Absolutely love it. You will too. All right, number 8 brings us to a very interesting story. Now, Danger, Danger, they got ready to record their 3rd album. It's an album called Cockroach. It's true. It's true. And so here's kind of what happened with this deal. Is when Cockroach was first recorded, the record company ended up having to shelve the album because of litigation. Because Ted Poley was very instrumental in the writing and recording of that album. They were trying to discuss rights and royalties and things like that. And so they couldn't reach an amicable solution, so they shelved the album. Now, this thing was recorded years before it was finally released. And so they kind of came up with a compromise once Ted rejoined the band. They released Cockroach Volume 1 and 2. Originally recorded in 1993, it didn't have its official release date until 2001. And to kind of make everybody happy, Cockroach Volume 1 has all the same songs recorded by Paul Lane, who was the vocalist that replaced Ted Poley in the band. And then they did Cockroach Volume 2, which were the original recordings with Ted Poley singing these songs. So they released both, and so no matter your preference of singers, you could get the songs that you wanted from the singer that you loved the most. And what's interesting too, you know, the debut album was good. The second album, Screw It, was also really good. And so album number 3 was kind of highly anticipated by fans of this band. And you don't get it for nearly a decade. And so you finally get that. And it was kind of a resurgence in popularity in the metal culture to hear those songs from 93. And you kind of hear the evolution of the band. But it is more true to the, you know, early 90s, Danger, Danger. But there's a great, great, great song on there. Great song. That's why it makes our list today. It's When She's Good, but When She's Bad, She's Better. Great song. That's number 8 from Cockroach Volume 2. All right, number 7. Another good song. This is off the Screw It album. That's the second album in the catalog there. It's a great track called Coming Home. It was the final single from that album. And this is when there began to kind of be a rift within the band. There was a lot of talk about, you know, Ted may go solo, and Ted did do some solo work, but they did go back into the studio and record Cockroach. But it's interesting that, you know, Coming Home was kind of that final single of the Danger, Danger, you know, heyday in many respects. You may not know this too, but they also, if you're familiar with the Santa Claus 2, maybe you are, the Naughty Naughty Christmas, that's a Danger, Danger track. Yeah, maybe you didn't know that. It's true. You know, Al Petrilli used to be in this band too. You guys know Al Petrilli was the guitar player for Alice Cooper for many years. He's part of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra now. You know, that great version of Carol of the Bells. That's Al Petrilli playing that amazing guitar riff there. All right, number 6, going back to the debut album. One of my favorite tracks on the album is Don't Walk Away. It's basically about a relationship where one person's kind of beginning to fade a little bit with their level of interest. And it's like, yeah, even though you're having your doubts, we can still work it out. You know, I mean, songwriting is not, I mean, it's not Stairway to Heaven by any stretch, but it is very, 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 you know, pop, rock radio type stuff. And again, I think Ted's vocal stylings were perfect for this level of music. Number 5, this was not a single, and it's probably the only song on our list today that wasn't officially released as a single. I absolutely love this song. I think it's one of the best songs that Danger Danger has ever put together. It Feels Like Love, and it's about those early days when you start to date somebody, you're hanging out, you're spending some time together, and you can't stop thinking about them. When you're away from them, you feel a little sick to your stomach. You get out that phone, you make that text, you go like that picture on Instagram just so they know that you're on their, that they're on your mind. But that's what it's about. Feels Like Love. And great, great song, and I think it would have been a hit. Now, our final 4 songs were hits in some varying degree of success. Of course, MTV used to play music before there was 24 hours of ridiculousness, Jersey Shore, and hair care commercials. Much different dynamic. and a lot of political PSAs these days. But I think we probably agree these are the top four songs. We may disagree on the order. Now, the lead single off the Screw It album, which was phenomenal. Love that album. It was initially going to be called Monkey Business, but the record company decided, you know, with Skid Row's success with the single Monkey Business, they thought there may be some confusion there, and so they changed the name of the album. But Monkey Business is the lead single. Now, if you listen to the album version, there's an intro that says, it's called Ginger Snaps. It kind of leads you into Monkey Business. And it doesn't have near the edge of the Skid Row version, don't get me wrong. But great track, number four. Number three, one of the best power ballads that you may never know. We've talked about it on the show before, but it's like power ballads that you don't know that you should. This is one of those songs, man, that it evokes a lot of emotion. You know, even though I have been in a relationship for a long time, right? There is still there some songs out there, there is some authenticity in what they say, and you can kind of feel it come through. This is one of those songs that this wasn't just, hey, I've got a riff, let's write a track. You can tell somebody lived this. It's a great song called I Still Think About You, number three. And yeah, let's talk about it. You know, it's been 3 years, a lot of tears. I got nothing but this song. But there's a line in there that absolutely has stood out to me. And I get chills even talking about it. And it's this line where he says, I guess loving me was just a temporary thing. I think at some point we've all felt that, you know. True, it's true. And so this song, while there may be some nostalgia to every bit of this, I think at some point it's very relatable to all people. I think that's why it was such a hit. I Still Think About You, number three. Now, number two and number one, this is where we may disagree. That's okay. I think most people would probably agree with me, but there are going to be some people that have been Danger Danger fans since their inception that may disagree with the order. Number two for me is Bang Bang. You know, what's that sound? I gave you my love and you shot me down. Huge hit. It was on MTV. It was everywhere. There were T-shirts everywhere. Everybody had to go see Danger Danger. And of course, they went out with Kiss multiple times. And ultimately with Alice Cooper, which is one of the things that led to Al Petrulli leaving Danger Danger for Alice Cooper's band. Kind of how that happens, right? It's all this, some big incestuous relationship. But Bang Bang, number two. Number one, though. And I could find a million reasons to play this song at Duty Noble Field. I could. But it's Naughty Naughty, which was the debut single from the debut album. And these guys went from complete obscurity to heavy rotation on MTV, and then everybody had to see Danger Danger. So you had Danger Danger's song Naughty Naughty. But there is kind of a robotic vocal in this. And then there's the little aside there where he's talking to the girl and she slaps him and says, what kind of girl do you think I am? And then she giggles kind of playfully, right? Absolutely love the track, love this band, and thank Richard so much for the suggestion. If you're looking for a band that maybe is kind of true to themselves, I would go listen to Danger Danger. They're a band that, they were part of a fun time in music. Of course, they were more of an 80s band in the 90s. So they were kind of the precursor to, you know, before grunge really became a thing, right? And of course, the metal acts of the day had kind of become a little bit cookie cutter of each other. It's true. It had gotten really bloated. But Danger Danger is one of those bands that had some actual talent. They just kind of got washed up in a change in music and a shift in the way the record companies began to market music. But Ted Poley, again, great singer, great songwriter. I think you'll dig him. So again, Richard, thanks as always for the suggestion. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit us up on Twitter. And Roy is the collector of the list. He's at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. Our great list also on Spotify, that same handle. Just hit subscribe. It'd be great. And maybe follow Roy on Twitter. It's not like he's going to be tweeting out pictures of his food. I may do that. Nah, really not very often, but he does it. Nah, he doesn't. Roy's a good dude. You follow Roy, you're going to get Mississippi State stuff, and you're going to get our great list. And, you know, not that he's an insider or anything. Roy's just a good Bulldog fan. He could deserve to follow. But we're happy to do him. And, again, as always, appreciate your feedback out of the top 10 list. All right, let's get into this basketball thing. This segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You will, too, if you don't already. Absolutely raving raving fans about Campus Book Mart. You're going to find the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in Starkville and really the known universe at Campus Book Mart. If you can't make it to town to see their lovely faces, let me encourage you to visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. It's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. We got SEC weekends upon us now. You need some new Mississippi State baseball merch. And be looking, of course, for some March Madness t-shirts only at Campus Bookmart. They'll get that stuff licensed, and they'll have it out for you very, very quickly. So be ready for that as we get ready to prepare for the NCAA Basketball Tournament 2024. All right, it was not a great first half, to say the least. I mean, Josh Hubbard was kind of bottled up. Tolu couldn't get going. And basically, LSU kind of dictated terms to us. And we can talk about, well, you know, the rims were a little bit tough, and they were for both teams. But I really think LSU came out with a great defensive game plan. They were going to stay with Josh Hubbard. They were going to face guard him the whole game. Simple as that. They were going to make somebody else beat him, and they were going to make Tolu Smith kind of have to contend with all that on his own, down in the post. I thought Cam Matthews had a good ball game too, but things really changed when Josh Hubbard began to facilitate, right? It's like instead of just looking for his shot, it was very frustrating at times. He got the float game going. He was able to kind of draw people to himself and then kind of facilitate. He had a couple big assists. And guys, State outscores LSU by 17 in the second half. You're down 7 at the break, and it's a 48-point half for the Bulldogs in the second half. That first half was abysmal offensively. We turned it over a lot. I don't know if we're just a little bit too anxious. Maybe we understood the gravity of the game. You know, you win, you're in. That's what Joe Lenardi had to say. And again, I can tell you from some sources on campus earlier this week, that was pretty much the accepted belief, is that, hey, if we want to be sure, we got to win this game. We weren't confident we were going to be in if we lost this game. It's all a moot point now as the Bulldogs win. Now we're 20-12. We talked about how important it was to get that 20th win. We get it now. I think if you'd beaten South Carolina or A&M, you're probably in no matter what happens in the tournament. But here we are. So we've done what we needed to do. Kind of looking back at the numbers here, we talk about what a great second half it was. State ultimately wins the ballgame 70-60. And I thought there were some unnecessary whistles late in the game on both teams. It's just so silly. When the game has been determined, let it play out. But DJ Jeffries, 34 minutes of action, 11 rebounds, and all of them were huge. He had a couple of offensive boards that State ultimately scored on those possessions. Just 8 points, but I thought DJ's defense was good, and DJ obviously is a guy that knows how to rebound in traffic. He was very, very good. Cam Matthews, a little bit of foul trouble. You know, got the third foul, had to be kind of careful on defense, but I thought down the stretch, he was really, really good with everything that he did on both ends of the floor. 30 minutes, 1 rebound, 3 assists, just the 3 points, which means that Cam's probably due for a big ball game. Tolu, again, really nothing going in his first half, but he does pull down 13 rebounds, 3 assists, and 8 points. Had some other opportunities at the free throw line that didn't work out quite as well as we had hoped. But the story of the day is Josh Hubbard. And LSU was bound to determine early on to kind of keep him kind of bottled up. They were double-teaming a lot, forcing him to give the basketball up. He ends up with 24 points. And I thought that was a very interesting stretch in the second half. About midway through the second half, when State was kind of beginning to pull away a little bit, Josh wasn't on the floor. And so we kind of began to just kind of facilitate. And I thought Rams Davis was really, really big for State down the stretch. This is a guy that's a former starter. He could have pouted. You know, he could have moved back home like some other people did. He could have just said, you know what, this isn't fair. But instead, he embraced his role, and it's been a really good six-man for State. And I thought Deshaun did a really good job kind of facilitating when Josh was on the floor. Matter of fact, we even go to the timeout. We come out of the timeout. We go right back out there with the same lineup without Josh. I think that really confused LSU a little bit. Like, well, now what do we do, Coach? You know, 13's not out here. Who are we supposed to double? And next thing you know, Rams out there facilitating, knocked down a couple big threes. Huge, huge game for him. 28 minutes for him and 12 points. Pulled down one rebound. Also had a really nice assist. Shaquille Moore, and he's a guy, too, that kind of comes and goes in the box score but does a lot of the intangibles. I thought he was really good today. The big three-point basket he hit right when State was putting this thing away was very, very significant. 17 minutes, a rebound, assist, and 9 points for him. Jimmy Bell comes in, gives you 10 minutes, didn't really fill up the box score, had the one rebound. And Sean Jones Jr., 10 minutes off the bench, really played hard, three rebounds and 4 points, and two of those were absolutely phenomenal. It's on the cover of our game recap story from Justin Frommer. Absolutely ridiculous, man. They let him get loose on the baseline, and Sean Jones absolutely heaves it home. As we used to say back in the 80s, they put him on a poster. Absolutely phenomenal, in the words of Ben Howland. Defensively, I thought State did a really good job for the most part, but especially late when State needed to kind of get back in it and spark a big run. It all started with defense. Tyrell Ward with 8 for LSU, Will Baker with 6. Jordan Wright with 7. Trey Hannibal is just a monster. He is. 18 points for him. Hunter Dean with 10. He has had some good games against us, but I thought down the stretch late, he was kind of absent for them. Mike Williams with 7. Jalen Reed with 1. And Mawani Wilkinson pitches in 3. Kind of looking inside the numbers here. State, at one stretch in the first half, was shooting 35%. We end up at 41.8% as a team. LSU shot 38%. Three-point shooting was a challenge for both teams. LSU just a shade better because they made one more three, but they shot 35%. We're 28.6. We were 6 of 21 from beyond the arc, but hit some big ones late. Free throw percentage, State 18 of 27 for 66.7%. LSU 15 of 21 at 71%. Rebound, we're even at 36. State pulled down 8 offensive rebounds, LSU 7 on the defensive end. State with 28, LSU with 29. State shared the basketball a little bit better with 11 assists to 9 for LSU. LSU with 4 blocks, a couple of those on Tolu, and 2 for Mississippi State. State with 10 steals, 9 for LSU, 18 turnovers for LSU. They're a team that's worse than the Southeastern Conference, and State pushed them beyond their average today. 19 personal fouls for the Tigers and 16 for State. So, hey, we win, right? Simple as that. We win. We're good to go. We're excited to get this thing done. And I think that's one of the things that you look at now is we had the 4-game losing streak, but we're in a new season now. So now what's next for us? Well, we don't have to sit around and wait. We know good well who we're going to play next, and that's okay too. So let's real quickly kind of recap what got us to this point. There's only been 3 games played in the tournament. South Carolina and Arkansas underway right now, or will be shortly. Arkansas takes care of Vanderbilt 90-85 last night, and then Jerry Stackhouse is fired today at the head coach of Vanderbilt. Not shocking news there, but Jerry Stackhouse, obviously a hero from our youth. You know, you'd like to think things work out better for him, but maybe he's just better off as a number two somewhere. But he's made his money. He didn't have to get out and coach. But Arkansas, Musselman and those guys, again, this time of year, they're always a difficult out. 90-85 winners. Georgia takes down Missouri, 64-59. So Missouri did not defeat a Southeastern Conference opponent the entire season, and mercifully, I think the season's over up there for them. I think they're happy for that. There's no doubt the season is over. I think they're happy that it's done, too. And then, baseball's not done well for them either, so they're kind of looking forward to football. And, of course, Mississippi State, 70-60 winners over LSU. So, South Carolina about to play Arkansas, and then tonight, Ole Miss will play Texas A&M. Now, tomorrow, the late game, too, is we got a late game tonight, Florida versus the game 2 winner, which is Georgia. So 3 more games to watch today. Now, tomorrow in the quarterfinals, State and Tennessee will get you going. That's going to be at noon, so be mindful of that. So we'll probably do our show today like we did yesterday. I'll go ahead and knock out some baseball stuff. We'll pause the game. We'll pause the show, do basketball, come back, give you immediate reaction to that. I got a little more baseball stuff to talk about today, but that's where we are. And the most important, hey, if you win tomorrow, we're just playing for seeding, right? I mean, we'd love to be able to win the SEC tournament. But the reality of it is we are in the big dance barring something totally unforeseen. So for the second straight year, Chris Jans leads the Bulldogs in the NCAA tournament. And what's interesting, too, there's a lot of talk out there. Lamont Paris, who will be the SEC coach of the year, if not national coach of the year, has signed an extension with South Carolina. Chris Beard with Ole Miss, they've signed. Todd Golden, Florida. They've had an extension. We've had some questions on the message board. It's like, Steve, when are we going to announce an extension? Well, I understand that that's under negotiation. We have not come to terms on that yet. We'll see how things play out. Maybe a situation, too, where, you know, Chris Jansen wants to focus on the season, you know, getting us to the tournament. And if you saw his South Carolina press conference, you can see what it all meant to him. I mean, he was absolutely distraught, kind of despondent during that postgame press conference. And if you hadn't seen it, maybe go back and watch it now. But plenty of basketball to watch as we kind of move forward with the tournament. It's a great time of year, as you guys know, and it's so great to know that for the second straight year, the Bulldogs will be in the bracket. And we'll find out about the women on Monday. We are not expecting them to be in. We also expect them to decline the women's NIT. And then we'll just get ready to kind of recruit out of the portal and see if we can't put something else together. But today we're celebrating because we defeated LSU for the second time this season. And LSU will probably end up in the NIT, I would think. But either way, their NCAA tournament dreams are now over. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're unfamiliar with that, just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will pop up, and you can view all the amenities that are available to you when you decide to book a stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Whether it is a work retreat or maybe perhaps just simply a work trip, maybe you need to come to the Golden Triangle and you got to bring a crew with you, book the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's not just a weekend resort. It's available to you all the time. And there are a lot of people that use it midweek when they're having to do some things up here. So I encourage you, hit the Google, check it out yourself. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO. It's completely up to you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. It's you live your life, right? But if you book through the Evolve website, I can save you some money. And maybe you've got enough. I don't know. I try to save money whenever I can. But use promo code BSR10 with the Evolve website and save 10% off your stay. So whether you're coming for a ball game weekend, maybe bringing the whole family in instead of going out and renting 5 hotel rooms and everybody being scattered all over Oktibbeha County, have everybody under one roof. That way Grandmom can make those cinnamon rolls for everybody at breakfast. How amazing is that? Maybe the kids are in town and the kids are adults now and they want to go out and relive their college years a little bit, and Grandma and Grandpa can take care of the grandkids. Kind of conveniently located for everybody. It's a great place, man. Great place. Conveniently located just 5 miles away from the Mississippi State campus. Not a lot of neighbors around. We don't want you out there having a rave or anything, but it's a lot of peace and quiet. You'll enjoy it. Be sure to go check it out today, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, so here's where we are with baseball. Nate Dolm is not going to start this weekend. Expected to miss this start, hoping to have him back next weekend against A&M. That's the hope. Now, it's important to understand, you know, Chris Simonis has always kind of been that guy that doesn't like to talk a lot about injuries unless there's like a season-ending type deal, and he doesn't like to talk about those then. But if there's a guy that we expect to get back, he just kind of says, hey, we're kind of working through it. Nate's working through it. But Evan Sierra is going to be the starter against LSU on Friday night. And then we're going to come back with Cal Steven on Saturday and Gerangelo on Sunday. And people are like, well, hey, why don't we just move everybody up a day? Well, you want to keep guys where they are, right? You want to keep them on the same arm care schedule. You start moving everybody around, you're asking for trouble. Now, remember last year, we threw off, and we're not really throwing off here with Sierra, don't get me wrong. But last year when we had Paul Skeens, we didn't throw Cade Smith on Friday. We pushed Cade back to Saturday. And we had Sierra start on Friday. And he went out there and shoved for a little while, and eventually they got to him. But State won the series. I think people forget that. State went down to Baton Rouge last year and won the series. And how great that was for us to, you know, go and win that series. We certainly would like to have gotten a Hoover and gone farther than that. But you know, one of the few highlights of the year last year was, you know, we went down to Baton Rouge and took 2 out of 3 from the NAFL champs. So that's kind of how we sit with all that stuff. Now, a lot of discussion out there, you know, who's available, who's not. Your notables, the guys that you know well this year, are going to kind of move forward. Now, what's interesting to me is, you know, what are we going to do in left? You know, we've started Nolan Stevens out there. We've started Aaron Downs out there. We've started Bryce Chance out there. Aaron comes up last night, obviously, with the big base hit there to walk off the winners against UNO. But I'm interested to see, you know, how this whole thing pairs up with LSU. And again, we're going to save our LSU preview for tomorrow. We'll be back with you tomorrow, and we'll talk about what to expect from the Tigers. But it'll be interesting to see what LSU looks like in a true road environment. A lot of people have kind of been holding out, say, well, I'm going to wait and come back. You know, when SEC weekends are here, we need a raucous crowd, right? We need a full Duty Noble Field. You know the LSU folks are coming. They're currently ranked number two in the country. And to be honest with you, rankings at this point in the year don't mean a whole lot. LSU is good. Are they the number two team in the country? I don't think so. They look a little more human than I think some people expect them to be. I thought they'd be a really good team and be in contention, obviously, for a top eight national seed just because of the pieces returning off of last year's team. No, they don't have Paul Skeens. They lost a lot of guys on the pitching side of things. But, yeah, they're a good club. But they've played almost all their games at Alex Box Stadium. And so it's just difficult to kind of know, you know, what to expect. That's the case for everybody, though. I mean, let's just kind of call it for what it is. We don't know anything about our team. We think we do, and we got a pretty good idea of who we are. But nobody knows who's good right now. You can say, well, you know, so-and-so's won all their games. Well, that's pretty evidence they're good. But the quality of competition in non-conference play in baseball, it varies tremendously. It absolutely does. And so we'll go this weekend without Nate and hopefully have him back next weekend. It's a big, big series, obviously, the road series at A&M. And one thing that I want to talk about, too, is what do we consider success? You know, we've won 10 of 11 games. And the caveat from the people that want Lamontas fired is that, well, look at the quality competition. Okay. But here's what I would say. We've won 10 of 11. Why did we not have anything to say during the winning streak? And then we lose a game on an unfortunate situation where, you know, miscommunication between the shortstop and left fielder. We let a ball drop, which kind of sparked a rally for them. How is that on the coach? How is it on the staff? Guys, we learned to catch a fly ball in Little League. We do that in the front yard with our dads. That's not to say that human error is not going to happen. It does. I can promise you nobody feels worse about that play than Bryce Chance and Dylan Cup. They know. They don't need you to go get on Twitter and let them know. They know that that play was really the difference in the ballgame in many respects. Because you make a catch there, it's still a four-run game. But instead, you give them hope. They know. We understand that. But it's so interesting. Like last night, you know, we're piecing this thing together. And you say, but Steve, you know, it's UNO. And you're right, it is UNO. That's a team that's played us a lot over the years. Maybe you didn't know that either. Did you know that? I don't know that you did. You know, that was one of those deals, too. For years, you know, UNO, people forget, they came in here and beat us in a regional one time. Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and prop those guys up and talk about that, you know, we're Mississippi State, we expect to beat those teams. Right? Don't you? I do. And it's so interesting, too, that I'm the kind of guy, too. I think Mississippi State should always be great in baseball. Maybe that's not fair. But I also understand that baseball things change from time to time. But State now 42-21 against UNO, the Privateers. We hadn't played them since 2005 until last night. A series that began back in 1970. Let that factor in for a second. We've played those guys 63 times now. Yeah, it's true. Kind of is what it is. But, you know, I share that to share this, is that it's a big deal for those guys to play us. It's a big deal for them to beat us. It's not a big deal for us to beat them. We expect it. That's one of the things that I've said on the show many times. One of the things that makes Mississippi State and LSU and Ole Miss and teams like that so good, Arkansas, is that even in the midweek, even if they don't throw, you know, their best pitchers, they're going to get after you, right? They're going to bring their best effort. We've had some teams in the past that have thrown weekend guys against us in midweek, But again, you go back and look at this. Like I read something yesterday, and I'm not going to embarrass the person. The same person predicted us to lose to Southern Miss last Tuesday. Well, we win. And then so we beat UNO, and then it's like, well, hey, yeah, we beat them, but, you know, Southern Miss scored 10 runs against them. What does that matter? What does that change at all? It's one of those things I just look at and I kind of ask myself. I'm like, what are we talking about? We're starting to compare margin of victory. A win is a win. You know what's interesting, too? UNO also played Evansville and took 2 out of 3 from Evansville. And, of course, the one they lost, they got shelled 18-4. those games were competitive, you know, and they lose at Tulane, you know, and then they take three from Alabama A&M, as they should. They beat South Alabama last week on March 6th, Wednesday, down in Mobile, beat them 7-5. Then they go on the road and get swept by Florida State. So I'm not sitting here trying to prop these guys up, but, you know, one of the things that, and I guess maybe I'm in a minority with this. I don't think so, though. I get so tired of our fans, in many respects, being our worst enemy. You know, we're not making a coaching change today. We may not make one this year. We may not make one next year. You know, the best thing for Mississippi State is for us to win and win big. It doesn't make any difference to me who the skipper is. My loyalty is to Mississippi State. But when we can't enjoy a 9-game winning streak, that's not about Mississippi State. And listen, I get it. You know, Chris Simonis, in many respects, and his staff, they've kind of worn out their welcome with some of you guys. They're not going to receive any grace from you all just because of the fact. It's like, hey, you know, we should never have to endure these kinds of things. And then all of a sudden we've had a half dozen or so midweek or non-conference losses, some of those coming in the midweek. That's just not what we expect. But I wanted to share some things with you, on our way out the door. I guess this is one of those, who am I type deals here. But, just kind of looking at some numbers here. You know, there's a team that we hold in very high regard. And looking back at the record books here, they went to Auburn and got swept. And they lose 3-2, 3-1, and 8-1. And those were all significant losses, every single one of them. And then after that, we lost again to Mississippi College. So a 4-game losing streak in the middle of the year. We bounce back, kind of get some things going. We go to Alabama. We take three from LSU. We go to Alabama, take 2 out of 3. And then we played Arkansas in Little Rock in a non-conference affair. Midweek game before Arkansas was in the conference. And they beat us 13-1. 13-1. So what team am I? Well, you're the 85 Mississippi State, Clark and Palmeiro, Bobby Thigpen, Gator Thiessen, Rourke McDonald group. Let's look a little closer here. So here's another team that, we lost a midweek game, lost a governor's game to Ole Miss, and then we lose to Louisiana Tech, 14-7. Get a little deeper in this thing. I guess we played Ole Miss early, and I don't know why that was. We lost 2 games to start with Ole Miss. We lose to Ole Miss, and then we play them about a month later, lose to them again. We lose to Southern Miss. We split a midweek series with them. We go to Kentucky, lose down there. But it's kind of crazy, you know. You look up and you say, you know, you only had 14 losses, and many of those losses were to teams you probably should have beat. I'm talking the 1989 Mississippi State team. And we'll go forward a little bit closer, a little bit closer to home here. And people forget to. I remember when you guys wanted to fire Ron Polk. I'm old enough to remember that. You're not going to fool me. All right, 2016, man. This team, if I remember correctly, we were like 12-5-1 at this point. We open up the opening weekend with a 4-game set. You know, the old Bulldog Classic. We lose 2 games to FAU. We went out to California, went 1-1-1. We lose to UCLA. We beat USC, and we tie with Oklahoma. And then we come home, put together a nice little weekend, and then we lose to Eastern Kentucky and Oral Roberts in back-to-back games. Eastern Kentucky got a 16-12. Pretty crazy when you think about it. It truly is. A&M came in here and swept us that year. And we went on to win the SEC Championship. I'm talking about your 2016 Bulldogs. Nearly identical record to what you got right now. The only difference is they had a tie. 12-5-1. We're 12-6, or whatever we are today. I have to look it up and see. All the days run together after a while. You know, they do when you work every day. It's true. It's true. You know it's true. But heading into SEC play, you know, we are... 13-5. And so, yeah, so same number of losses. They were 12-5-1 and went on to win the SEC championship. And I remember after we lost the Eastern Kentucky Oral Roberts midweek games, people were like, John's not going to make it. Fire John Cohen right now. And we went to Vanderbilt and took 2 out of 3. Number 2 Vanderbilt. We went up there. A kid named Mangum had a couple big hits for us. It's true. You know, flipping ahead too. Got to find this on the computer. They don't print media guides anymore. But I recall, I'm old enough to remember too, that we won an AFL championship a couple years ago. Seems like forever ago. It does. It does. And you'd say, but Steve, you're just kind of belaboring the point. No, I'm just trying to illustrate the point that there's only so much that you know about a team at this point in the season. And especially when you start, you think, okay, well, Nate's hurt, going to miss a start. We hope to have him back next weekend. But then you see Bradley Lofton beginning to get it going. And you have one good outing, you know, from Holcomb and Ligon. You start thinking, if nothing else, and maybe they can help us in the midweek and save some arms for the weekend. But I just point that out because I think we have a tendency as a fan base at times to gravitate to the negative things that are happening. And maybe it's because we're just bracing for impact. But you may, you know, may have forgotten this. You know, remember that Friday loss to Tulane when that kid came down here and shoved? Yeah, and then we lost to Kent State. Remember that? Yeah, we strung together a pretty good non-conference record. We head down to LSU. We should have swept them. We blew it. And then Arkansas comes in here and sweeps us. We're expecting a big, big series. And before Christian McLeod can get settled in, it's already like 4-0. Start piecing some things together from there. And do you remember that Missouri series? Remember that? We were in contention to win the SEC championship. Remember that? And we lose 2 out of 3 to Missouri. Basically removed any possibility of us winning the SEC championship. And then we went to Hoover, and we got shelled. And we came home, and there people were saying, we don't deserve to be a the top 8 national seed. We don't even deserve to host. We got 10-run rule twice in Hoover. And then we went on to win an AFL championship. We swept through our own regional. We took 2 out of 3 from Notre Dame, a team probably the toughest seed that wasn't in the top 8. They were, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, of course I got to go to Mississippi State. We won an AFL championship. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this team is going to win an AFL championship because I don't believe that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I believe this team is going to make an SEC championship. I don't believe that either. I do believe this is a team capable of making the postseason. I don't just mean Hoover. I believe we've got a really good chance to make the NCAA tournament. And so I just share that because there's only so much you know at this point. And we have a revisionist history. It's like I remember people like, oh, well, the days of Polk, that would never have happened. Well, it happened with regularity because that's how baseball works. It's not like football where you just go out there and you're just, you know, kind of aggressively getting over everybody. Do you remember in 2008, Polk's last season, we lost the first 2 of the year at North Florida. We lost 2 out of 3 at North Florida. We got swept by Baylor in our own ballpark. It was an abysmal year, guys. It was. And maybe you've forgotten that 2018 team we had. After we had to say goodbye to Andy Cannizzaro, and we had that road trip that lasted us until we got New Mexico State in here. But remember, we opened at Southern Miss, played at Jackson State, went to Corpus Christi, played a couple games down there, got McNeese State on the way back, went down to Houston and had a really good weekend in Houston, and we came back, thought we'd righted the ship. But people forget, we got swept by Southern Miss, we lose at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, we lose at McNeese State. We even lose the game, the opening game of the series against Utah Valley. And then we lost to Southeastern Louisiana in Biloxi. That team went to Omaha. And they were eliminated in the bracket final against the eventual NAFL champion, Oregon State. So again, I just say that, telling you to be patient. Let's see how things play out. It's not this game-to-game thing. It's like we've been we're waiting for 10 games for Lamontas and Crew to lose another one. We said, what about now? What about now? What about now? It's like a bunch of kids. Just relax and enjoy the season. Whatever happens is going to happen. Worrying about it, speculating about it, it's not going to change anything. We know what needs to happen. This team's got to be in the postseason, period. If it's not, well, then I'll get ready to fire up a hot board. But not before then. Not just because you're angry about a ball game. I'm not going to do that. We're going to respect the season. We're going to respect the administration, the coach staff, respect our players, our baseball parents. We're going to support this team. We're going to cover this team extensively, no matter what anybody else does. And then whenever the chips fall where they may, we'll adjust. Listen, if you hadn't done so, you need to book your appointment with True Rest. It's getting busier and busier every weekend. So if you're coming to town this weekend, and we've got a little bit of availability left on every day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But I don't know, that may not be the case by the time you listen to the show. Dial 662-268-7601 and get more information about the availability. Or you can download the True Rest app and book online. We do have four pods and four people float at the same time in their own individual pods. And be sure and check it out. Running a special right now, too. And of course, you hit Dana up, she'll let you know. It's half off the first float as we get into March. So be sure and check us out. You'll be glad you did. If you hadn't done so, go to winthebottomfalls.com. All my sports titles are there in addition to Win the Bottom Falls. And you need to be a member of our great website over at jeanspage.com, the Mississippi State affiliate for 247 Sports. We'll be back with you on tomorrow. Again, we'll get ready. We'll preview the LSU baseball series, and then we'll talk about whatever happens between Mississippi State and Tennessee on the basketball court. But again, I think everybody can sleep well tonight knowing we're headed to the NCAA tournament. Not the play-in game. We're going to be in the regular bracket and not have to play our way in. And again, congratulations to all who observe this time of year. I know all of you that are Mississippi State fans. No matter what your favorite sport is, you're always excited to see us advance and postseason play. You want the best for Mississippi State. So let's all get behind this team and look forward to seeing where they're seated and where they're going to be playing out of. But the bottom line is this. Mississippi State expected to make the men's basketball tournament now, really no question about it. And the women still kind of sweating this thing out, probably not going to get in. And we open up SEC baseball play this weekend, and then pretty soon we'll have some spring practice reports for you. For football, a lot going on this time of year. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.